Ed White is a correspondent with the Financial Times, and he's our Asia correspondent. Very timely, Ed. Hello.
Oh, good morning, Lynn. How are you?
We've been talking about AUKUS with academics and with our foreign minister. Very interested to get the perspective from your patch.
Yeah, so when this was announced, Joe Biden, the US president, stated that the initiative, including the submarine plan, which is at the heart of it, was basically necessary to ensure the countries had really the best technology to defend against rapidly evolving threats. Now, this was a statement, didn't mention China, but was appeared fairly directed straight at Beijing. This is part of a much broader effort by Biden's administration to really reassert the strength of the US allies, both to repair the damage done by Donald Trump in terms of the our relationship with the US allies, but also, I think more importantly, in response to what the US sees as the rising challenge and competitive threat from China, particularly under Xi Jinping in recent years. So among those to see this new arrangement and in particular Australia's expanded defence posture in a very positive light was Taiwan and Japan. So for the government in Taipei, which probably faces the most acute or immediate existential challenge from Beijing, which obviously claims Taiwan as part of its territory, officials there in Taipei were pretty excited by this. They are hopeful that having the UK and Australia play a greater role in the region will actually help balance that threat and protect them from China. Colas Yotaka, the presidential spokesperson in Taiwan, also happens to be indigenous Taiwanese. She said that broader involvement by the members of the international community is a positive and a very necessary trend. So they actually want to see more things like this. Another former Taiwanese general who we spoke to signaled that basically that's some really clear support at the idea of having greater Australian action in the region on the security front, basically as something that will help not just for Taiwan, but in the South China Sea and broadly into the Western Pacific. Similarly, in Japan, which is another country which has been kind of at the forefront of joining that wider US effort to counter or to challenge China, officials there were also very, very pleased to see more partners helping to address the concerns over Beijing's expanding military footprint and its increasing aggressive military action. So clearly, these allies are very, very pleased to see this extra support kind of materialize after a lot of talk over the past 9 months or so from the Biden administration.
I'd wondered if Japan might have expected or anticipated being invited into the pact.
Different sort of scenario for Japan. They've obviously got the sort of constitutional arrangements that have a very strict rules around what their military can and can't do, and they've also still got huge numbers of American troops based in Japan, so not quite the same need, but certainly they are really, in a diplomatic sense at least, really at the forefront of joining the US efforts. They are very much involved with a lot of the other issues, a lot of the other diplomatic arrangements, including the Quad, and obviously the sort of any time that the Biden administration is talking about countering China and talking about providing more support for Taiwan, Japan has been really quick to join those efforts.
And the response from Beijing?
Well, it does seem as if Beijing was perhaps somewhat caught off guard, maybe like everyone else by this, and it was a little bit slow to respond, both in terms of the official response and state media, but Zhao Lijian, the foreign ministry spokesperson, stood up in Beijing yesterday and he said that these moves would seriously undermine regional peace and stability. He claimed that Australia was really contributing to an intensification of the arms race, that's the words that he used, and also was basically undermining nuclear non-proliferation in the region. So they're sort of seeing this from a very historical point of view. Zhao also made the point, and this is something that China is saying more and more frequently now, which is that the US and its allies are really adopting something of a Cold War mentality or a zero-sum mentality, basically singling out China. And that's sort of leaving China increasingly isolated, which in some respects is the actual design of the whole enterprise. So they are right, perhaps, on that front. But as expected, the Chinese state media went a lot further than these somewhat diplomatic remarks. So, for example, the Global Times, this very nationalistic outlet, they described what Australia was doing as basically Australia just being a lapdog for the US, and they warned directly that any kind of provocations that come out of this, if there are provocations, Beijing would be really swift to respond in kind. And I think really the attention now will be focused on what are the real repercussions in the meantime for Canberra. You know, its relations with Beijing, as many people know, have been pretty strained for some time. And so I think there are still, even though that's been the case, there are still certainly more economic pressure points or levers that, China could use to punish Australia if they choose to. And I think it also obviously raises questions for other countries, including New Zealand, over what role governments and people want to play in the region, especially if this polarisation between the US and its allies and China continues. Now, Xi Jinping, the Chinese leader, is scheduled to speak later today. This is a completely separate meeting, actually related more to Afghanistan, but we may see something more from the Chinese side later on today.
Well, interesting times for whoever takes over in Japan as Prime Minister.
Yes, so the Japanese Prime Minister Yoshida Suga, he's going to step down after just a year in office. And this was something of a shock announcement. His approval ratings had dropped well below the 30% mark, and it was sort of viewed as potentially untenable that he was going to be able to win an election when they are held later this year. This was mostly seen as due to his handling of the pandemic, and there had been hopes that after successfully staging the Olympics that there might be a boost, but that obviously didn't eventuate. So this has put the spotlight on a leadership race inside the Liberal Democratic Party, and this race will be held in just a few months, and whoever wins that will basically be the front runner when it comes to the general election, which is earmarked for November. Now, one of the more interesting things at the moment among the contenders is Sane Takachi, and she would potentially stand to be Japan's first female prime minister. She's a longtime ally of Suga's predecessor, Shinzo Abe, and she has already, in fact, won Abe's endorsement. She has a difficult role, I think. She's only one of a few prominent women in Japanese politics. And gender aside, she's actually quite controversial or somewhat divisive, with quite hardline nationalistic views, very tough views, in fact, on national security. So she's done things like frequently visiting the contentious shrine in Tokyo where the remains of Japanese soldiers, including war criminals, are interred, and that always creates a stir in the region. It's opposed by China and South Korea. She's also very keen on constitutional reforms designed to actually strengthen Japan's military capabilities, as we were talking about before, which is, again, always a very controversial topic, goes back very many decades, and obviously harks actually back to the Second World War. Ultimately, though, there's questions that even though she's a woman, on how good she would be for the women's cause in Japan. She's herself got very quite conservative views on women's rights. She supports, for instance, keeping legal provisions which force married couples to use the same surname, and she's against allowing a woman to succeed in Japan's imperial throne or in the imperial line. At this stage, there are a few other quite interesting contenders as well that maybe will have a better chance, just given Japan's sort of conservative nature of politics. You've got a former, couple of former defence and foreign ministers. But observers have noted that given the sudden resignation, there does just appear to be a chance that Japan will potentially be going back to a sort of quick-fire leaders or premiers after this long, long stability that we had under Shinzo Abe.
Thank you so much for that analysis. That's Ed White, our Asia correspondent.